You're listening to the Monetary Blog from the FOMC Insight Engine. This is The Retreat. The March 2026 FOMC statement made four changes from January. Markets barely noticed. We decoded each change against 90 years of documents. On March 18, 2026, the Federal Reserve released a statement that will be consumed in seconds. Another hold. Another Moran descent. The S&P will register it and move on. But this is not the same statement the Fed released in January. Four changes, a substitution, an addition, a subtraction, and its grammatical consequence, restructure what the institution is performing. The changes are small enough to escape headline parsing and large enough to reconfigure the Fed's relationship with what it claims to know. In January, we decoded 234 words against 90 years of documents, the translation. Now we apply the same method to the March statement, with January as our baseline. What follows is the Delta translation. What changed, what the changes do, and what the March statement cannot say that the January statement also could not say. The four changes. Before examining individual words, isolate the raw deltas. Everything else in the statement is verbatim from January. Delta 1. January said, signs of stabilization. March says, little changed in recent months. Delta 2. January said, absent. March says, the implications of developments in the Middle East for the US economy are uncertain. Delta 3. January said, Moran and Waller dissent. March says, only Moran dissents. Delta 4. January said, were, plural. March says, was, singular. Four deltas. The rate decision, the forward guidance, the Fed put paragraph, the mandate paragraph, and the strongly committed formula are all verbatim from January. Three of the statement's five sections are word for word identical. The formula holds. The changes are surgical. And the precision is itself the signal. 1. The economic assessment. From the FOMC statement, available indicators suggest that economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace. Job gains have remained low, and the unemployment rate has been little changed in recent months. Inflation remains somewhat elevated. Available indicators suggest the same careful hedge as January. Solid pace, the same growth adjective that replaced December's moderate. Job gains have remained low, still extraordinary for the Fed's vocabulary, still performing the operation of acknowledging weakness while denying deterioration. Inflation remains somewhat elevated, somewhat, still converting a roughly 40% overshoot of the target into a nuance. The change is in the middle sentence. Key change. Signs of stabilization, little changed in recent months. January said the unemployment rate had shown some signs of stabilization. March says it has been little changed in recent months. These sound equivalent. They are not. Signs of stabilization is an interpretive claim. It names a trajectory. Things were deteriorating, and the Fed judges that the deterioration has stopped. The underlying narrative is optimistic. Stabilization implies the worst is behind us. Little changed in recent months is a descriptive claim. It reports a fact without reading anything into it. It does not claim stabilization. It does not claim deterioration. It says, the number hasn't moved. The shift is from institutional judgment to institutional observation. And it matters because signs of stabilization was doing work in January. It supported the narrative that the labor market, while weak, was finding a flaw, and that flaw supported the hold decision as prudent patience. We can wait because things are stabilizing. By replacing judgment with description, the March statement withdraws from that narrative. The Fed no longer claims to know where the labor market is going. It only reports where it has been. This is the retreat that gives the post its title. The Fed is narrowing what it's willing to claim. In January, it claimed to know the direction. In March, it claims to know only the level. Translation. We said the labor market was stabilizing in January. We're not saying that anymore. The data hasn't given us permission to claim a direction, so we're reporting the level and going silent on the trajectory. 2. The mandate and the Middle East. From the FOMC statement, the committee seeks to achieve maximum employment and inflation at the rate of 2% over the longer run. Uncertainty about the economic outlook remains elevated. The implications of developments in the Middle East for the US economy are uncertain. The committee is attentive to the risks to both sides of its dual mandate. The opening sentence is ritual. The committee seeks to achieve maximum employment and inflation at the rate of 2% over the longer run. Every statement begins with this preamble, for the same reason the court proceeding begins with "All rise." It establishes the authority that makes everything after it legitimate. Over the longer run is the escape clause that makes any current deviation tolerable. The target is permanent, but the timeline is infinite. The closing sentence is also unchanged. Attentive to the risks to both sides, the symmetric risk language introduced in January, replacing December's directional tilt that had explicitly acknowledged rising downside risks to employment. That directional language authorized the December cut. Its absence for two consecutive statements confirms that the authorization for cutting has been structurally withdrawn. The change is the new sentence between them. Key change. The implications of developments in the Middle East for the US economy are uncertain. The Fed almost never names specific geopolitical regions in the post-meeting statement. The vocabulary is designed to be maximally abstract. Financial and international developments, the standard formula in the final paragraph, covers everything while committing to nothing. To name the Middle East specifically is to break the abstraction. The sentence does three things simultaneously, none of which it can acknowledge. First, it performs awareness. The Fed positions itself as the institution that monitors risks ordinary observers cannot fully assess. By naming the Middle East, the committee demonstrates that it sees what markets see. This is the guardian function, the institutional claim to vigilance that underwrites public confidence. Second, it preserves discretion. The implications are uncertain, is the most content-free formulation possible. The sentence does not name the specific development: war, escalation, sanctions, energy shock. It does not quantify any economic impact. It does not specify how the Middle East connects to the US economy. Oil prices, supply chains, financial markets, trade flows. It does not assess whether the risk points up or down. Maximum acknowledgement, minimum commitment. Third, and this is the sentence's deepest function, it prepositions a justification pathway for future action. The statement's final paragraph contains the standing formula, financial and international developments. That phrase has sat dormant for years, abstractly covering all possibilities. By naming the Middle East in the mandate paragraph, the committee has created a live referent for international developments in the Fed put paragraph. If Middle East conditions deteriorate enough to justify a cut, the institutional pathway runs. The mandate paragraph named the risk, the standing formula in the final paragraph covers it, and the cut is authorized within the existing architecture. No new language needed. The closest historical precedent is the committee's handling of the Iraq War in 2003 and the Gulf War in 1990-91, when geopolitical risk was named in statements but paired with uncertainty language that preserved full policy discretion. In both cases, the naming served a dual function: demonstrating institutional awareness to markets and pre-building the justification for action if conditions deteriorated. The pattern is consistent: geopolitical naming, extended hold, eventual ease when economic impact materializes. Translation: something is happening in the Middle East that is significant enough to name, but too uncertain to act on. We are telling you we see it. We are not telling you what we think it means. If it gets worse and we need to cut, This sentence is the retrospective justification. We warned you. If it resolves and we don't act, this sentence is forgotten. 3. The decision and forward guidance.
From the FOMC statement. In support of its goals, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 3.5% to 3.75%. In considering the extent and timing of additional adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will carefully assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. The committee is strongly committed to supporting maximum employment and returning inflation to its 2% objective. This paragraph is verbatim from January, which was itself modified from December. Every operation we identified in the translation remains active. Additional adjustments presumes the direction, cuts are still coming, without specifying when. Extent and timing is the anti-commitment formula, maximum discretion preserved. Strongly committed to maximum employment and returning inflation to 2%, the conjunction and still papering over goals that are currently in tension, promising both at once when the economics may require choosing between them. The absent phrase matters more than the present ones. December's decision paragraph began, "In support of its goals and in light of the shift in the balance of risks, the committee decided to lower." That clause was the authorization formula. It named the condition that permitted cutting. Its absence for two consecutive statements is no longer ambiguous. This is not a one-meeting omission. It is a regime change in the statement's architecture. The holding pattern is structural. The paragraph has reached equilibrium. It simultaneously maintains the easing bias, preserves full discretion, and avoids committing to any timeline. It will persist in this form until the conditions for cutting return, at which point the authorization formula will reappear, and its reappearance will be the signal. Translation: Nothing has changed in our decision logic. We still intend to cut. We still won't tell you when. The authorization formula hasn't returned. Until it does, we hold. 4. Where the architecture lives. From the FOMC statement. In assessing the appropriate stance of monetary policy, the committee will continue to monitor the implications of incoming information for the economic outlook. The committee would be prepared to adjust the stance of monetary policy as appropriate if risks emerge that could impede the attainment of the committee's goals. The committee's assessments will take into account a wide range of information, including readings on labor market conditions, inflation pressures, and inflation expectations, and financial and international developments. Verbatim from January. Verbatim from December. This paragraph has survived unchanged across three consecutive statements, and across decades of prior statements in nearly identical form. It is the most stable structure in the Fed's public communications and the most revealing. Appropriate is defined by the Fed, evaluated by the Fed, and determined by the Fed. It sounds like a standard. It functions as pure discretion. If risks emerge that could impede, triple conditionality, if, not when, emerge, haven't materialized yet, could, even the risks are hedged. The trigger for action is mandate-threatening risks, but our archive research has documented how financial conditions functions through this language as an independent policy variable, retaining predictive power even after controlling for unemployment and inflation, the precondition. The final five words are where this architecture comes alive. Financial and international developments. In January, this was a standing formula, dormant, covering all possibilities. In March, the Middle East sentence in the mandate paragraph has given international developments a live referent. The abstract formula didn't change. The context around it did. If the Middle East situation deteriorates, the institutional pathway from risk acknowledgement to policy action runs through this paragraph without requiring a single word to be altered. This is the architecture at its most sophisticated. A standing formula that reproduces unchanged while the surrounding context activates different parts of it as conditions evolve. Translation. The standing formula is unchanged because it never needs to change. The Middle East sentence has given international developments something to point at. If we need to cut, the pathway is already built.
5. Where the crack closes. From the FOMC statement. Voting for the monetary policy action were Jerome H. Powell, Chair, John C. Williams, Vice Chair, Michael S. Barr, Michelle W. Bowman, Lisa D. Cook, Beth M. Hammock, Philip N. Jefferson, Neil Kashkari, Laurie K. Logan, Anna Paulson, and Christopher J. Waller. Voting against this action was Stephen I. Moran, who preferred to lower the target range for the federal funds rate by 0.25 percentage point at this meeting. In January, both Stephen Moran and Christopher Waller dissented in favor of a 25 basis point cut. We decoded that dual dissent as extraordinary. A White House appointee and the president's reported preferred candidate for Fed chair both voting for easier policy against the committee's preference to hold. Two politically visible dissenters, from the same direction, is not a footnote. It is a story. In March, Waller has returned to the majority. Only Moran dissents. The crack is closed. What changed between January and March? Three possibilities, none mutually exclusive. First, data evolution. 8 more weeks of little changed unemployment data may have convinced Waller that the labor market was not deteriorating fast enough to justify unilateral action. But Waller's concern in December and January was structural. 2025 seeing near zero job creation, not cyclical. The structural picture hasn't changed. Second, the Middle East. The new geopolitical uncertainty gives inflation hawks a reason to hold, even if they sympathize with the labor market case. Cutting into a potential supply shock is harder to justify. Third, institutional dynamics. Two consecutive dissents from the same direction attract attention. One dissent is a controlled release of pressure. Two consecutive dissents risk becoming a pattern, and a pattern invites the narrative that Trump appointees are coordinating against the Fed majority. The statement's format cannot distinguish between any of these explanations. The boilerplate records Waller among the majority voters with no explanation. It records Moran's dissent in identical language to January, who preferred to lower the target range for the federal funds rate by 0.25 percentage point at this meeting. The standard format absorbs the changed political dynamics and outputs identical text. Moran's isolated dissent now reads differently than in January. Then it was part of a pair, Moran and Waller united. Now it is solitary. An isolated dissent from the board's newest and most politically associated member is institutionally containable. One voice, one preference, recorded in neutral boilerplate. The democratic function of recorded disagreement is performed. The consensus holds. Translation. Waller came back. The two dissent story is over. Whether this reflects changed conviction or changed institutional calculus, the statement format makes both indistinguishable. Moran dissents alone, which is politically legible. The president's appointee wants easier money, but institutionally contained. The unity performance has been restored. What the statement cannot say. In the translation, we identified what our archive research revealed. The overwhelming majority of the Fed's communications perform the implicit financial stability commitment without ever naming it. This statement is no different. Here is what 240 words structurally exclude. The statement says, economic activity expanding at a solid pace. What it cannot say, solid is chosen because it supports holding,
not because it most accurately describes an economy with near zero job creation and Middle East uncertainty. The statement says, job gains have remained low. What it cannot say, 2025's near zero job creation is structural, not cyclical. And little changed replaces stabilization, because the Fed can no longer claim to know the direction. The statement says, implications of the Middle East are uncertain. What it cannot say, we are naming the risk to demonstrate awareness and pre-position a justification pathway, not to communicate a genuine analytical assessment of its implications. The statement says, attentive to risks to both sides. What it cannot say, unemployment and inflation both elevated, the stagflationary configuration we acknowledge through symmetric language but will not name.
The statement says, decided to maintain the target range. What it cannot say, we would prefer to cut, but inflation, geopolitical risk, and our own removal of the authorization formula prevent us. The statement says, Waller voted with the majority. What it cannot say, the 2% crack threatened the unity narrative. Waller's return is institutional repair, not necessarily a change in economic conviction. The statement says, financial and international developments. What it cannot say, the Middle East sentence has activated this clause as a live pathway to future action, but naming that pathway would expose the unnamed third mandate. The full translation. If this statement could speak in the language of institutional reality rather than institutional performance, here is the full translation. The economy's surface metrics look strong, but we've stopped claiming we know where the labor market is going. In January, we said it was stabilizing. We're not saying that anymore. The unemployment rate hasn't moved, which is better than deteriorating, but also not the improvement we'd need to justify holding indefinitely. The assessment serves the decision. Little changed supports patience in a way that stabilization no longer could, because stabilization was a trajectory claim we couldn't defend. We've absorbed a new risk, the Middle East, into the architecture. We named it because it's too visible to ignore, but we've wrapped it in maximum uncertainty language because we don't yet know whether it helps us or constrains us. If oil prices spike, it argues for holding. If financial markets crack on geopolitical fear, it argues for cutting. We've pre-positioned the justification for either response. The naming is the institutional act. Declaring it uncertain is the discretion preservation. Waller came back. The 2% narrative was drawing too much attention. Whether this reflects changed economic conviction or changed institutional calculus, the statement format makes both indistinguishable. The boilerplate absorbs the dynamics. What matters is the crack is closed. The forward guidance is unchanged because the forward guidance has reached equilibrium. Cuts are still coming. We won't tell you when. The authorization formula hasn't returned. For the second straight meeting, the condition that permits cutting is absent from the statement's architecture. Until it reappears, we hold. And when it reappears, that will be the signal. The standing formula in the final paragraph is unchanged because it never needs to change. The Middle East sentence has activated international developments as a live referent. If we need to cut, the pathway is already built. No new language required. The architecture adapts. The March statement is not a new statement. It is the January statement with four surgical modifications, each performing a function the statement itself cannot name. A retreat from interpretation to observation. A geopolitical naming that pre-positions justification without constraining action. And an institutional repair that closes a politically visible crack in the consensus. Three of five sections are verbatim from January. The decision paragraph, the operational center, has been unchanged for two consecutive meetings. The Fed put paragraph has been unchanged for three. The deeper the formula's persistence, the more it has been refined to do exactly what it does. Coordinate expectations, preserve discretion, perform the unnamed commitment.
The template is the Fed's deepest institutional technology. It persists regardless of changing conditions. Four changes across 240 words. Every one of them performs a function the statement cannot name. The formula reproduces. The architecture adapts at the margins while preserving its core. The retreat is not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of precision. The institution pulling back to the territory it can defend while keeping the pathway to the next cut fully intact. The ritual holds. This has been the Monetary Blog from the FOMC. Insight Engine at causalityineconomics.com.